Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hi, Jodi. How are you?
Hello, Eleni. I'm so excited to see you today. We have so much to talk about.
We do. What's on your mind?
Well, I love our many years long partnership with Kisako Research. They put on so many events that we've attended and participated in through the years. They've been an incredible partner to our podcast and our agency. And there's another event coming up in just a few weeks. It's the Dermatological Beauty Connect in Miami.
That's so exciting. I love the Kisako team and the events they put together. They really do an incredible job of very thoughtfully bringing experts on super relevant, unique, new topics together in one room. And it really makes for a very educational and invaluable time on site together. I've presented at a few Beauty Connect and Healthy Aging and Nutrition events in LA and New York. So I'm excited for you. Tell us more about the event.
Well, the event will be in Miami on March 21st and 22nd. And I'm thrilled that the panel I'm moderating is the first session of the first day, which means I get to help wake everybody up. And it's going to be a really fun discussion about the expansion of dermatology into retail. So I'm joined by Amy Schechter. She has been on our podcast, actually, when she was at Glam Squad. Now she's the CEO of Everbody. And Penny Coy and Selena Cox, they're both from retailers, Ulta and CVS. So our topic is the rapidly emerging consumer channels that are driving change in skincare. And we're going to talk about trends and crystal balls and really understand where physician dispense medical grade skincare connects with those that are readily available at mass.
That is so interesting. I'm sure lots of people will have questions on this topic. Hopefully you have a very engaged audience. And we always love to talk to people on LinkedIn and Instagram as well. And I hear there might be a promo code for anyone interested in joining.
Yeah. So if you're interested in attending the event, it's a really incredible event. If you are C-suite at a brand that's looking to grow and meet new relationships in the investing world, so private equity, venture, M&A, retail, it's an incredible place to be. They're small events, so you really get to meet people and spend time with people. So that promo code is SPEAK10, S-P-E-A-K-10. And you can go to the website, get 10% off your event ticket. And if you are attending, please message me on LinkedIn because I'd love to see you there.
Great. Amazing. Okay. So dermabeautyconnect.com for 10% off. And I can't wait to hear about this after your Miami trip. We're also throughout this season, we're going to be adding in guests from the Beauty Connect series with Kisako. And I'm really excited to learn more about their career journeys.
And I just want to give a shout out to Emma Richardson. She is at Kisako. She runs programming for all these events that we participate in. I don't know how she has the time to do it, but she plans out every single event to make the content really robust, find great speakers, brief all these speakers in a beautiful way, and create a really beautiful moment on site at these events. So I am very impressed with Emma and we love working with her.
Love the team. Thank you, Emma.
So this is a really lovely episode. It's with Erica Metzger. She's the creator and founder of The Beauty Loop, which is an essential, like totally essential newsletter if you're in marketing and PR. And we're so happy that our own director of media relations, Arlene Benza, connected us with Erica so that we can get Erica on the show and she can share her story.
Amazing. Every time Arlene shares an insight from the Beauty Loop newsletter, it really helps us think of our events from the side of those attending, like PR execs or beauty journalists, and how we can make improvements for everyone.
So it's such a great, valuable source for networking and information sharing. And Erica is so vulnerable and honest and breaks everything down for us in this episode. So let's get to it. This is episode 251 with Erica Metzger. Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. We are a career journey podcast talking about what it's like to define success and reach for it in the beauty and wellness industries. Today, we are continuing our C-suite wisdom quarter with Erica Metzger, founder and editor of The Beauty Loop, a valuable source for community and networking within our industry. With over 19 years of experience in print and digital media, as previous beauty director at Ladies Home Journal and Better Homes and Gardens magazine, her new venture, The Beauty Loop, helps facilitate engagement and community between PR execs and beauty journalists, providing valuable intel to help both communities adapt and thrive in our dynamic industry. I'm excited to dive into the conversation about her career journey from magazines to community builder, all on episode 251.
Hi, Erica. Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty.
Hi. Wow, what an intro. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so thrilled that we could do this. We've been working on this for a while, so I'm really happy that you're able to join for this quarter. And this theme is C-suite wisdom, and you're doing it. Like, I love the beauty loop. I'm not even a publicist, but like, I love reading it. I learned so much. It's such an incredible window into a very complicated world that we work in. But before we dive into any of that, I want to just note that you are typically on the question asking side of interviews.
Correct. Yeah.
So what are you feeling right now?
I'm a little nervous and I'm hoping I don't run out. I tend to like be a little, I can go off in a lot of different directions. So just keep reining me in. Cause that's just the way my brain works. I'm like a spider web with things. But I'm psyched. This is really cool. I'm very flattered to be here and I'm excited to talk to you about my career.
You're going to do great. You have such a fascinating career and, you know, you've really tried to carve out something so special and unique. And not only did you try to do it, but you actually did it. And there's a big difference between people with ideas and people who actually build the idea. So we're going to have a lot of fun today. Okay, let's go to where we love to start our conversations. This is a career journey show. And I know when I was a little girl, I wanted to own a store, be an archaeologist, I had a whole bunch of aspirations. I wanted to own a jewelry store.
Oh, wow.
And be an archaeologist.
Wow, okay.
So think back to your childhood, like your 11-year-old self. 11-year-old Erica, what do you want to be when you grow up?
I was always into art and writing. So I just loved creative writing. I would like make little stories and illustrate them. So that was sort of like my area where I sort of kind of stood out in school and I got a lot of affirmation. And so, yeah, that was 10-year-old Erica's dream.
So people recognize your art. They noticed it?
Yeah, yeah. In high school, I was the class artist.
What does that mean?
I don't know. In senior superlatives, I did well in art class. I thought I was going to be like an illustrator, actually. But I loved writing too. And I'm like a very practical person. So I just, I think the things I thought I could do with that would be like, being a writer, writing for magazines. That seemed to be like somewhere to kind of like take those skills and be able to earn a living. Cause I just really wanted to be able to like provide for myself. That was something that felt very important to me from like a young age.
So your work got noticed and it felt good.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like that's such an important thing for a teen, right? To get recognized for doing something well. It's taking me back. I know I'm going to go on a tangent here, but I love Below Deck, this show on Bravo. Have you ever watched it?
No, I watch other Bravo shows. So, but that one I have not been swept up in.
So, you know, all these people are working on this yacht and it's a hard, grueling job. And this one woman on her first day in the whole season starts breaking down in tears and tells her boss that she's upset because no one's going to be able to see or recognize her work. And I thought that was so fascinating that like that was what was getting her, not being like overworked or tired or, you know, the kind of like physical demands of it, but that people weren't noticing. Right. And that just made me think about how important it is when we're young, because she's young, to get recognized for something. Otherwise, you're just sort of like floating in space.
Yeah, I think that's like, I mean, I guess I lucked out with like my teachers and even like at home. I think like we used to do like art contests at home. I mean, it was kind of like, that sounds a little weird and competitive. My mom was like into art and creative. And I think that, you know, it just felt like very natural to be like drawing. And, you know, we didn't have all the same distractions that kids grow up with now too. I think we were bored also. So it there's just less stuff to keep you entertained. So you had to kind of create things to keep yourself amused. I think that probably I benefited from the time that I grew up, you know.
So when you were tween and a teen, there were physical magazines to read.
Yeah.
What were some of your favorites?
I remember really liking Jane Magazine, 17. I think I was into Marie Claire. I remember taking like Glamour Magazine. I remember like, taking pictures and getting like, Drew Barrymore had that really short haircut and I like took it to try to get that haircut. It did not look the same. But like, you know, magazines were like my guiding light for sure. I love them. And I didn't really understand like the career aspect totally, but I kind of understood, you know, you could write and this was something that came out regularly. It seemed like a much easier path than, you know, trying to write a novel or something. Like, you know, I kind of was putting that together in my brain of like possible things that I could maybe
You're taking me down memory lane and I'm thinking about like my tween years, like the Tiger Beat and all
Oh my God, we're going back early. Okay, whoa, whoa, whoa. Sorry. Let me admit, I had Christian Slater on my wall. I had Charlie Sheen. I don't, who was like some, what, Leo? Leo was on there. Yes, I definitely had that period of like the boys, the boy crushes.
So I think for me was New Kids on the Block, the first of the boy bands. Yeah, before NSYNC and before Backstreet Boys.
Yeah. Right?
So my cohort, it was all about New Kids on the Block. I didn't hang posters on the wall, but I definitely like was super into it. And Duran Duran.
Oh, okay. Okay. You like the musicians. Okay.
I didn't think I knew like teen culture to know that like people hang things on their walls. You know, I guess like, I don't know. You just don't know that these things happen. They happen in the movies. I guess they didn't happen in my real life. But yeah, I just remember like getting those magazines. My mom would buy them for me like when I was homesick, you know, and like as for something to do. It was a really special time for magazines.
It was. It like you go from Highlights magazine to like the Teeny Bopper one. It's kind of funny. The transition, right?
I love Highlights.
Yeah, we got it. My daughter gets it. It's
so
amazing.
Good. All those, she loves like, it. The picture, inside the picture. I love that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, so let's talk about this. You got recognized as an artist. You wanted to communicate creatively. Writing seemed like a way to do that. Did you have any like role models in your like the world you were living in that actually made a living out of writing?
No. No, I like, it's kind of insane that I'm in this. I made it into this industry, but I mean, I would say, you know, I was not a glam girl, but I really got into makeup. My mom and I would like bond over like going to like, I grew up in central New Jersey. We would drive up to like the Short Hills Mall. We would go to New York, go to Bergdorf, the makeup counters. And like, that was sort of our, you know, the way she could like splurge a little bit. And I would spend my like money that I had, like I had so many part-time jobs. I would like save up to buy makeup. It was like our special time. And when I was at those counters, I kind of got a little bit of exposure into like this, there's this world outside, like jobs that you can do, people doing interesting things. I didn't quite put together those pieces though of like, I'm going to be a writer. Like it seemed like a big dream. You know, I didn't know anyone doing that. I don't know. I was clueless.
Why do you think your mom chose beauty as her like happy splurge place? It could have been something else, certainly, right? Like what about beauty call to her?
Well, my mom is a very creative person and beautiful. She's just like a beautiful woman. And I think, you know, that there was like a fascination with just cool stuff and like looking stylish. And I think her mom was like stylish and, you know, and I think that was within her means, right? Like she couldn't like buy a dress at Bergdorf mm-hmm. Goodman, but we could go to the counter. We could go to like NARS and get a lipstick or go to Bobby Brown. And having that like, and having somebody like, just seeing how the magic of like interacting when somebody's like helping you feel beautiful, that's like a really special, unique gift, which I feel like I felt it in a lot of my jobs actually, just like writing content and thinking about, you know, the audience you're writing for and just giving them really good information to help them feel good. Like there is like a magical aspect of beauty where it's special. It makes you feel like connected to another person. It's like beyond the surface stuff. Mm-hmm. There's something like very emotional about it that I think I just like was, I saw something there. It was like happy. It was like a happy moment, you know?
So let's talk about your entry into this world, right? So these are highly competitive jobs, not easy to get, kind of insider only.
Yeah.
What was your first role in magazine publishing?
So my first role in magazine publishing was an internship at W Magazine. And that sounds so like amazing and sophisticated. But I just want to like paint the picture because I was so green. I was so clueless. I actually was about to get an internship at like a book publishing company in New Jersey. And I was going to work like at a landscaping company on the side. Like I had this plan. And then a friend of mine who was at a different college sent me this like casting call thing for Fairchild publications. And I just was like, oh yeah, let me go see. I mean, it was such a whim. I went, I interviewed with a bunch of different editors who were there. And I thought you're going to laugh at me. I thought I was interviewing for Jane Magazine because at the time, Jane Larkworthy was the beauty director there. I mean, this is how like clueless I was. I just, so, and honestly, like I still to this day, I'm like, I don't know why she picked me because I feel like I stuck out like a sore thumb, but I had a really good work ethic and I was very polite and professional. I think I was like a very earnest, not jaded person. So I think that probably I benefited from my greenness, and it worked for that internship. But that's how I got my foot in the door, which it was a miracle.
Back then, after you left the interview, is that when they told you you got the job, or did you have to wait a long time?
I feel like I heard like probably the next week they called and said it, and it was kind of like, then you just go. You know, that's that kind of stuff's a blur. When you're young, you can kind of just do things so quickly. But I don't think it, I mean, now I know. Nowadays, it's like you're going on millions of interviews. It's so different. I think they need it. And this was a free internship, you know, like I had to call my book publisher and be like, turn down a paying internship and be like, I'm going to New York. Bye.
So when did you realize that it was not Jane Magazine that you were going to get the job at?
So I had gotten an associate's degree in fashion merchandising with the plan of going to FIT for their cosmetics. I don't even remember what the program was called, but it was sort of like the 2-year plan. It was kind of the budget plan to like get to FIT. And I think I had heard about W there. Like so I kind of knew, but once I was there, I was just, it was such a culture shock. It was just like, everybody was so cool. Everybody was so thin and like stylish and like busy and just, I remember it was just, I just was really trying not to like stand out, really trying to learn what I could and not be annoying. I felt like, you know, that was kind of the sense of it, but it was such a cool atmosphere because it was just an open kind of newsroom setting. So you saw a lot, of personalities, and yeah, that was really cool. It was a cool and scary moment.
You're making me think of, it's the movie with Jennifer Garner, 13 Going on 30. Do you remember this movie?
Oh yeah. Like, yes,
she's
of course.
Like a kid who doesn't like know anything about this world and then gets thrust into it. Okay. So Jane Larkworthy, by the way, was a guest on our show many, many years ago. So I hope she's listening.
She's a legend. She's a legend.
Do you still have that friend who sent you this job posting?
We're like, you know, she's on social media. No, we lost touch, but she was an amazing, you know, amazing person. And really, like, I owe her. I really should reach out and just send her a box of beauty products. Yeah.
I think it's a really nice moment to, like, these people in our lives and we don't know why, and these, you know, interactions happen. We don't always know why, but I love this idea of you just saying hi.
Yeah.
To her. That would be probably make her day. Okay. So, from internship to a career, it's a big leap, right? So a lot of people probably have internships and they don't even last. In the internship, you made this a career. Why do you think you had what it takes to keep advancing in this really competitive space?
So you just meet people, right? And I didn't do anything super excellent there, to be honest with you. I stood around a lot. Sometimes I didn't even have a desk. So it was not my performance or writing, I think, but I tried whatever I was given, like organizing that. I just tried really hard. I just tried so hard to like be helpful and not be annoying. Like that was kind of my people pleaser instinct was kind of like telling me like, don't be annoying. And like, so I think there was one thing that kind of definitely led to my first job. There was mail from Patricia Reynoso, who had worked for Jane, and she had moved on to a job at Ladies Home Journal. And we had gotten her mail one day accidentally, or, you know, I had to forward it. So I had to so I sent it to her. And then I ended up getting an internship. Jessica Matlin, another like amazing person in this industry, helped me get an internship at Harper's Bazaar. I was there for like 1 month and I saw this job opening at Ladies Home Journal. And I saw that Patricia Reynoso was there and I was just like, oh, I remember that name. Does she, you know? And so I asked, it was Carrie Diamond was there. It was like all these really iconic people. And, you know, I think Jane put in a word for me with Patricia. I think Carrie knew my editor in chief and I tried, you know, and I think Jessica helped me with my editor. I mean, I really got a lot of help because I did not understand how any of this worked. Like I just, it's, you know, you take it for granted now, knowing how all the little things that are really important to do. And just one little thing that I learned later that my Patricia had told my boss, she was like, one of the reasons I got that job is because I wrote in my thank you note to the editor in chief, I wrote, dear Ms. Salvatore. And I think everyone else wrote, dear Diane. And it was something that I guess I just was not as casual. I know things are so different now. So again, don't do what I did. But I think that that just was some kind of a, it pushed me over in some weird way. There's all these weird things that kind of push you over in a job, for a job that you can't plan. And that was one of those little magic things that helped me.
So Jess Matlin has been on the show too. So hi, Jess. Hope you're listening.
Hi, Jess.
I want to go into this topic because it's something that we talk a lot about in my day job at Base Beauty. And it sounds like it was really important at the beginning of your career, which is people teaching you not just how to do the job, but how to have a job, right? How to navigate, how to spend your time effectively, how to communicate. I think this is really hard for young people in these careers that in the world that we're in, because people back when you and I started had no choice but to take time and sit down with us and actually show us how to do things, right? And like invite us to meetings so that we can just sit and listen and learn and watch. That doesn't really happen anymore. The speed at which work works is so much faster. Yeah. Nobody has time. There's no like extra room in the day to like sit and show somebody how to do something and like keep watching them evolve in it. So I'm curious, as you've evolved in your career, have you noticed that there's less time to teach the younger cohort not just how to do the job, but how to have a job?
I think it depends on personalities, honestly. And I think depends, again, on like bandwidth and the level of responsibility. But I know I've had editors who are super busy, who have had these like super generous moments of education and who like take time to do that for their team. And then I've seen people who expect you to have figured it out and look at you like you're a moron because you just didn't know something. And I know for me, I've always been the person who probably gives you advice. I always give you advice you didn't ask for, because I just remember feeling, it feels a little traumatic, you know, when you want to do a good job, you're trying so hard, and there's just like these things that you don't have the experience and you don't know. And some people will give you that, you know, that breathing room to learn. And some people expect you to go quick, quick, quick. And it's, you know, sometimes it's just like you might fail a little bit and then you learn from that. And I mean, I've always learned like the more you can anticipate what your manager, your editor needs, the more you can solve. If you're always problem solving and trying to think, how do you figure things out versus bring problems? I always feel like that has been a very helpful tool to have. Like if you might have a question, maybe have you exhausted everything that you know how to do before you kind of ask for things that maybe you might be able to figure out yourself. But it's hard too. You have to ask questions too. If you don't know, you have to ask questions to learn. So
I love this idea of exhausting all options. But then, you know, having the enough comfort and confidence and hopefully respect of the person you're asking this of, that they sit down with you. We've done a lot of talking at my team about like going back to like high school sort of thinking. Like if I need extra help in math, I go after school and the teacher sits down with me and shows me how to do one problem, right? And then watches me do another one and then says like, oh, wait, you forgot to carry the one, right? But then after I get that one and I figure it out, she'll say, okay, here's five. I'm going to go do something at another table. You work on five and then let me know when you're done and we'll look at it together. Like, work requires that sort of tutoring, you know, for people learning how to do their jobs. And we really have to make time for it, because otherwise no one's going to be able to speed off and do the work if they don't have a foundation.
Yeah. And I think that comes down to like, I don't know, sometimes people become like managers and they don't know how to train. Mm-hmm. I think like sometimes you just, you get promoted and you don't learn. And that's sometimes you learn by not being a great manager and then realizing, you know, how to fix that. I know that was like my experience. Like sometimes you just don't know how to teach someone else. It takes experience, honestly, and a certain temperament. But I think, you know, if you're lucky to like, if you find a role where you are working for someone who's willing to teach and likes to do, like that's an amazing gift. Like somebody who can train you basically. And even I found that I've had bosses who sometimes you don't even realize they're training you in other ways. Even if they're just talking about things, if you're just really listening to what they're saying, you can just like pick up so much from just your like everyday conversation of what's working, what people need. I just think like being really attuned is a helpful like skill to have, to really pay attention to what's being said body language, all of that is, it's really important.
Right. So the manager's a responsibility to, you know, teach, but then the other staffer has a responsibility to really listen and pay attention. Right?
Listen, pay attention, learn. And I do think for this industry, the expectations are really high to be a quick learner. Mm-hmm. I think that you do get a little bit of a grace period. And then after that, it's sort of like, you know, people start becoming impatient with you.
So let's talk about the beauty loop, because I said at the beginning of the show, I love it.
Thank you.
And I'm so proud of you for making this happen. So how many years has it been that the beauty loops existed?
So I'm 5 years. It'll be 6 years in August, which it's kind of amazing. I monetized it after 2 years. So it's been like a really cool evolution. It's kind of wild to me. It's really fun to work on something that's just your own thing. You know, after working so hard and dedicating yourself like for the brands you work for, and you put so much like passion and like energy and all your creative stuff, and then, you know, I've learned, you know, through my career, like those jobs are temporary, you know, you're not there forever. And so it feels so good to work on something that, you know, I started. It's a cool thing. I still am like, how did this happen? Why is everyone into this? But I'm so like grateful to that it's gotten this far.
So take me back to that moment of inspiration where you're like, there's a white space here for me, and I think I'm the one to fill it.
So when I was at Better Homes and Gardens, and I really thought I'd only be in that job for like 2 years because it was a print job, and I just like, you know, the industry has changed so much, and I just started feeling like I noticed two things happening. Other beauty directors, like my cohorts and colleagues, some of the ones who are really kind of like killing it were creating a brand for themselves. It was sort of like their companies saw that as an asset versus like a liability, because it wasn't always like that. But now it was like, if you were like a micro influencer or whatever you call the medium influencer, whatever, editor influencer, that was like really special and cool. If you started a podcast like Jess and Jen, like that was amazing. So the bar was just getting like higher, you know, and I felt like I was a beauty director, but I felt like I was feeling these feelings of like jealousy, to be totally honest with you. Like, well, I don't, you know, at first you're kind of like, well, wait, that's not what this, I'm doing my job. You know, why is everybody so into them and blah, blah, blah. And like, I kind of just did not like that energy. I just felt like rather than focus on everybody else who was like shining, I thought, let me put that energy to figure out how do I kind of figure out something for myself. And that was a really like light bulb moment for me, honestly. And then the other thing that was happening at the same time, so that I was thinking about like, how do I figure out a brand for myself? And then at the same time, like everything got big. Like there were more brands, more agencies, more editors, just like our little like ecosystem felt like it was exploding. I felt like every week there was like whiplash, trying to keep track of like events, who's repping who. And you know, you're a beauty expert, and like your job is to feel like you know what's going on. And honestly, like I felt like it was going so fast, and I couldn't keep track of everything. So that was sort of like the birth of this idea of like, I thought, I know my personal brand. I feel like I'm sort of I feel like I'm a very reliable, professional, friendly, kind of like a helper kind of person. Like I like to help people. And I thought that's kind of my brand. And I was also very inspired by my really good PR friend, Jamie Mazur, has had a newsletter forever, Media Intel. And she was doing this thing where she was like basically posting whenever an editor would go to another magazine or website, it was like really quick. And that was that's still her newsletter. Everybody should subscribe to that too. And I thought, well, what if I kind of did an editor version to solve those kind of issues that I saw were going on? And so that's kind of like how the beauty loop kind of started. That was the idea. And then getting everyone convinced to kind of like come aboard, that was like, took a little bit of time. But and now it's sort of like, it's really taken off. And I feel like people really use it. They rely on it. And it kind of keeps evolving as the needs change in our industry. Because, you know, it's just like, there's just never a dull moment in beauty.
I'm so grateful that you were so vulnerable just a moment ago to say, like, you looked around at your peers and your peers are investing in their personal brand and winning. And sometimes when you watch that happen, you're not a part of it. It makes you like boil inside a little bit, right? Like, why not me? Right?
And, yeah, not even, I wouldn't even say, it was more like the feeling of like, just, I don't even know how I'm, like, it was almost like the rules changed mm-hmm. and you feel like, wait a minute, I'm doing everything. Like, you feel a little helpless. Mm-hmm. And then focusing on like, yeah, it was like, I feel like it wasn't as like green envy. It was more like that I wanted that so bad and it, you know what I mean? And focusing on what other people were doing. Because I feel like it sounds so negative, but it was, it felt like a negative headspace for sure.
Right. Well, there is a saying, compare and despair, right? So yeah. You're like looking at your career and you're like, I did that and they did this and I did that and they did this and now look at where they are. And I totally understand that feeling of like the rules changing. It's so dysregulating, right? You've been, you know, you had your head down, you've been doing everything you've been taught to do and it's still not good enough, right? It's not enough.
Yes. 100%.
It's very challenging. I'm right there with you too, because like there's so much reluctance in me about like influencing, so much so that I took an account at Instagram years ago called the Reluctant Influencer and never did anything with it. Cause like, that's how reluctant I am.
It's very on brand.
And like to this day, I watch people in this world dedicate a lot of time and energy into doing this, feeding this animal and, you know, creating a lot of success for themselves. And I still just don't want to do it. You know, it's just not right for me. So I had to find my own thing, right? Because yes, yeah. I have to create relevance. I want to grow my career. So I'm really happy to hear that there's, I have a peer in this like reluctance side.
Oh, I struggle. it does not come naturally. I honestly now I really I'm really impressed, and I try to take inspiration from my friends who do it so well and make it like so easy, because it's like cool that people, it's cool when you can find your groove, right?
Yes. You know, what I've realized is I spent a lot of my early years in my life not keeping my head where my feet are. So like so much multitasking and so much kind of like thinking about the future, thinking about the past and not actually paying attention to the present. So now I'm in this phase of my life where like I feel really connected to the present and being here for whatever it is, like something mundane or something exciting. And the challenge I have with this sort of influencing world is that it requires me to be like in this moment, but also thinking about the future and planning in the future. And that is not something I want to do, right? I've done that. I didn't make it public, but I live my life that way. So I don't want to live my life that way anymore. So I'm not willing to take the time to pause a moment I'm having here to produce it for later.
Yeah. Yeah.
So therefore the reluctant influencer.
I get it. But you know, it's cool to have, I feel like that's what makes, when you have a different platform and, it's like, you know, a lot of this information you could probably piece together on social. Like people post a lot of things. I'm speaking about the newsletter. You could probably piece together with screenshots this information. You know, it's some of it. It's just like a different way to digest it. Like you have this way that you're like a conversation. You're just digesting. You're learning in a different way. You're retaining in a different way. So it's nice that these platforms are super powerful, social media is, but it's nice to have other options to kind of like learn and, you know, take information from. Like, I feel like there's value in an email, you know, a good email that helps you do your job. There's a lot of value there.
Right. So what you do is what like social can't. Like social is chaotic and always moving. And what you're able to do is like press pause in a moment in time and give me like an accurate picture of what's happening. Right. So that's the difference, right? Like yeah. It's almost like being on socials walking through a hurricane, right? And like your newsletter is like a sunny day at the beach, right? It's just calm.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Right?
It's just calm. The sun's out. The birds are chirping. The water's moving at a normal pace. It's not attacking the world. So anyway, I just love that you've committed yourself to finding and advancing your career in a way that feels good and feels true to you. And not everybody can do that. And I'm really proud of you. And I think it's really important that your voice is heard, because a lot of people think they have to play a game that doesn't feel right for them, and they don't. They can find their own way.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. That means a lot to me. And I feel like that's something, especially as I've gotten older and my career has evolved and I've evolved and I'm in my 40s, and even like you're in your, like you start feeling like when you become like the oldest editor at a beauty event, there's a lot of questions where you're like, you know, do I still belong here? And I think, you know, it's really, I still love beauty, and I know there's people my age that love it. And I know, you know, I still have a lot to offer, and I feel like it's really important. I feel like the way to tell those stories have changed, and the way to talk about what you can do and bring to the table has changed. You have to keep evolving all of that, but it feels really good to like find some footing and find a place in an industry where it does feel like young, new is like the most important thing, the end all be all. So thank you for that compliment. I appreciate it.
What a beautiful way to end the interview portion of our show. So thank you, Erica, so much for sharing your vulnerability and your story and your background with our listeners today.
Thank you.
Okay, let's change tone and get to some fan questions. We have a bunch here, but this is a really important question. How do I sign up for the Beauty Loop newsletter?
Oh, I love this question. Yeah. Sounds like a plant, but thank you. So I guess the easiest is on my social, Erica R. Metzger. It's in my link in bio, or my website is ericametzgermedia.com, and there's a link to the Beauty Loop.
Great. So you heard it here. It is really such a great newsletter. Like I said, I'm not a publicist, but I get value out of it. You create so many insights for the category in terms of how to best get your message out. And these are the questions that everybody has, and right, they ask you in private, like, would you rather go to a breakfast or a lunch, right? But like to be able to look at your research, and you interview so many people doing these jobs at all levels, to be able to have that and be able to then share it with our clients. Like, we're not making this up, you know, this is the actual feedback, and this is what's happening today. And yeah, it's probably different than the insights and the point of view 3 months ago or 6 months ago.
It keeps changing. But right? The best practices is just, it evolves. It is not something you can just like put a pin in and think it's like, okay, we know what it is. For every year, everyone's tastes and what they're able to, their preferences, it just changes. So we're on that roller coaster together in the Beauty Loop.
So this is a really important question. For someone just wanting to like enter, like entry level in editorial and beauty, what is the job now, right? So there's clicks, right? You need clicks and things. So like, how would you describe that entry level job?
I mean, like just how to get your foot in the door, like for somebody who wants.
What are they even doing? Like, you know, the romanticized idea of a beauty editor might not actually be reality. Yeah.
I think there's more opportunity for e-com editors. So, but still, you need to know market for that. But those are the stories that are like a lot of those roundups. I think, you know, those SEO stories where you have to hit those keywords, those gets assigned, those are kind of like more entry level, I guess, in some ways. And I think I see a lot of like new people who are kind of breaking in that I think is a cool way to break in is like they do those like kind of first person testimonial type beauty, you know, like I tried XYZ. And I feel like that's a good opportunity for new voices that we haven't heard or seen before. Like I feel like I see a lot of new editors and writers writing those kind of stories that it catches my eye because you literally see their face, mm-hmm. like they show it.
So that's in the next question. Like for entry level people or people new to this world, can they pitch the way people used to pitch articles? Is that even a thing still?
I think you need to, you know, you have to kind of you have to form some kind of a relationship with an editor or get on their radar somehow. And I think trying to understand what kind of pitches they're looking for and accepting is a time saver for the person who's trying to get their foot in the door and for the editor. So the more you can, you don't want to send like 20 pitches to someone without just blindly, you know, like that doesn't really make a lot of sense, but, you know, I think it's if you have kind of you're kind of really intentional about if you really want to write somewhere, you really know the content, you know the stories, you have a story that could be great or you have some ideas, I think those kind of emails are more well received, and sometimes it takes some time to, because editors' inboxes are like just, it's in, their inboxes are insane. So, you know, like I would just say also like kind of don't give up. I would say like, you know, you have to keep emailing people, not too much. Don't overdo it. Try, you know, there's a lot of places to write though also, and people need content. So there's opportunity, but just be smart about it.
I love it. Well, Erica, that takes us to the end of our time together. You have been amazing. Thank you for joining us for our 251st episode.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you. It was really fun to cross over to that 250 milestone. And for everyone listening, thank you for joining us. Please rate and review our episodes. And as always, make sure you're following us on your favorite podcast platform and Instagram to stay up to date on our upcoming episodes and all the fun we have along the way. And thank you so much, Erica. It was really fun to spend this time with you.
Thank you. This was so fun.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.